Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. Today, let me show you the power of philosophy and history. I never went to university. That was just not an opportunity in my life. But we're not going to go into that. The point is that never at any time did I really think much about the topic of philosophy or take an interest in it or even know what it really meant until I met a couple of other guys here in South Africa, Boers, but very, very clever Boers who were also National Socialists. In that photo on the left, you see two white guys, and they're actually at a Mirage fighter jet here in South Africa in the time of white rule, in the time of apartheid. And you can see the pilot there with his headgear on. But you see that man standing next to the pilot, that guy who's also got a headset on and who's talking to the pilot. His name is Leon Hart, and he was a top engineer. Leon was the head of the South African Air Force missile testing at Arms Corps. Arms Corps was our military manufacturing parastatal. So this photo is from the 1980s, and Leon Hart is talking to a Mirage pilot. And Leon's job was to test missiles. He was basically a missile engineer. And the whites of South Africa built lots and lots of very advanced stuff, including their own missiles. But the first man that started teaching me a bit about philosophy was a guy I don't have a photo of. His name was Fanny Kruger, also a National Socialist, and I've referred to both of these guys in previous videos, but I used cryptic names for them. So for Fanny, I used to call him my Boer Nazi pal, and Leon I called my Boer pagan pal. Fanny was a university lecturer in scientific method. And between the two of them, they taught me about philosophy, and specifically Nietzsche. But I think I got some of my deepest insights into Nietzsche from Leon Hart. And like I say, philosophy had no meaning to me. I didn't really understand it or grasp what was so great about it. But once I understood a little bit, I was then extremely impressed. And I urge whites, serious whites, to read things like philosophy. And you will find that the European people have thought very, very deep thoughts. And I'm actually a big fan of Nietzsche, thanks to none other than Leon Hart. Because once you understand these things, you will see that a lot of stuff that you read that you think is spiritual, you'll think, ah, this book is spiritual. Here's somebody who communes with God. He knows so much. Once you understand philosophy and you start reading philosophy, you'll realize, man, that there's a whole other level of thinking. And this type of stuff is deep, it's accurate, and it has incredible meaning. Philosophy, in a nutshell, is really an attempt by highly intellectual thinkers to try and think through various problems that humans face and how to overcome them and what you can learn from them and what behavior is the best. That is just a very simple kind of definition that I'm giving you. Because philosophers really, really think. And it's not a bunch of mumbo jumbo. It's not a bunch of stuff that's just a bunch of nonsense that they're just thinking, that they're just sucking it out of their bums. They are thinking about the real world and they are looking at the real world and what can you actually learn and what should you take away from this. And Nietzsche wrote about many things. Nietzsche truly was great. I'm a huge fan of Nietzsche, and we'll be revisiting Nietzsche. The other man in the photo is also a Boer here in South Africa. His real name is Marius Els, and he was a farmer, and he had a pet hippo. We will discuss Marius and his hippo later. Another thing that Nietzsche is very famous for is the Superman. And the Superman is a very, very important topic. And the Superman is a topic that we need to look at real carefully. There are very important lessons in there. The Superman is very critical, very critical. But that needs to be dealt with properly. So Nietzsche came up with many good concepts and he wrote things. And Nietzsche predicted the future as well. Nietzsche predicted the future for hundreds of years in advance, actually. And what Nietzsche predicted, I can tell you, is going to come true. It's going to come true. So Nietzsche didn't have to have visions. He didn't have to speak to God. Nothing like that. Using only his intellect, his knowledge of history, his understanding of life and people, he could come up and tell you things and make statements that will amaze you and astound you. The future, in certain respects, is known. So in this video, I want to discuss humans and animals. And I'm talking about all kinds of humans, whites and non-whites, all different types of humans. And animals. And what can we learn from Nietzsche about humans and animals? The first thing you must understand is that we humans are animals. I find that Christians are constantly trying to duck and dive and pretend we're not animals when it's very clear that we are animals. We bleed like animals. We have hearts like animals. And you can see the similarities between us and other higher animals like mammals endlessly. You can see the same design, heads, necks, hearts, lungs, two forelimbs, two back limbs. It's just that we walk upright on our back limbs, but otherwise we are very much like other animals. And of course, the other thing about animals is that animals also have brains. So when you're talking about humans and animals, you're talking about a living creature, and often we are also talking about higher level living creatures. And the more intelligent those animals are, the more and more they are, let's call it, in our league. And there are lots of clever animals. And scientists have been studying animals and animal IQ. Hitler, more than 100 years ago, was already pointing out that animals have intelligence. And what is lost in the history of Hitler, which the vast majority of people don't know, is how intellectual he was, how he avidly studied books, read every book in the library, and was constantly filling his mind with knowledge. And Hitler also had dogs, and Hitler pointed out that animals are very intelligent. And he was absolutely certain that his German shepherds could understand him. Well, now, all these decades later, scientists have done tremendous amounts of experiments on animals, and they've established that animals have got an IQ. And that is something that scientists have gone into a lot. What amazes me is some of the IQ of animals in water. And the animals in water, especially the octopus is actually an incredibly amazing animal. I'm actually quite surprised that we haven't yet seen an octopus civilization, because an octopus has got a lot of things that really give it an edge. Not only has it got a very smart brain, but it's got lots of tentacles which serve as arms and legs, and an octopus has got incredible agility. But scientists have been experimenting, and this is a whole fascinating thing all by itself. They've been experimenting and testing animals for intelligence, all kinds of animals, vertebrates, invertebrates, you name it. And animals definitely have varying levels of IQs. So animals not only have instincts and impulses like we have, we also have a raw animal nature that is part and parcel of us. But we as whites, using our higher minds, we have learned certain benefits from discipline and from planning and from working as a team. Civilization is nothing more than a very, very advanced form of cooperation. That's all it is. But we also have animal instincts, raw animal instincts inside of us. I've mentioned before that these raw animal instincts are immoral, and these raw animal instincts are based mostly on survival. That deep down inside of us, there is a part of us that wants to survive, and it comes out in strange ways. The fight or flight syndrome is one of those things. The other one is the desire to mate, and it can include things like lust and that kind of thing. And then what you get is you get humans who start behaving in a wild way, and they just let the animal side of them take over, and the animal side takes over and it does things. Next thing you know, a girl is pregnant. But this is all part and parcel of the animal, and I've mentioned before that the animal is actually not moral. The animal wants to live, and the main impulses of the animal is to live. That's what its impulses are there for. But over and above impulses, raw impulses, there is the higher mind. And that mind is the mind that thinks, that mind is the mind that plans, and that mind looks forward to the future, it looks forward to eating, and it's thinking about living, eating, survival, reproduction, etc. Now, in our minds, we can plan and create very sophisticated plans. Very sophisticated, complex plans, plans that involve all kinds of activities done over a long period of time, interacting with others who are doing other activities, and this whole plan can come together and it benefits us in some way. You may call the plan politics, you may call the plan life, you may call the plan military strategy, you can call the plan your career, but whatever you call the plan is there, and everybody has got a plan and they are working towards their plan. But scientists have found that animals also can plan. They've found that there are lots of things that we do as humans that animals actually also do. And they've devised complex experiments, and they can prove that birds can plan, that all kinds of animals can plan, and that animals can even use tools. Most animals who kill in order to eat are killing simply because that is their normal meal. But I will tell you that it has been found, and this is true in chimpanzees, they've even found examples of violence as part of planning, violence and murder. So the more that you study science and nature, the more you'll realize that, you know what, the differences between us and animals is not that great. The main thing is that we've got a very, very super, super, super sophisticated higher mind that allows us to do incredibly complicated things. But other animals are also learning. And animals, certain animals, may be becoming more intelligent also as they are learning and evolving. The future is going to be very, very interesting, especially the long-term future. What will humans and animals be like in 1,000 years from now? Or 1 million years from now? That could be a very, very interesting question. But the bottom line is that humans and animals, whether you're dealing with the subconscious, natural, raw instincts that come out with anger and rage, or whether it is calm thinking, the bottom line is that humans and animals are looking at their own survival. Each creature is trying to live and survive and reproduce. It's just that our strategy is much higher than that of the rest of the animal kingdom. We are the top of the pops. And we've just taken it to levels that are incredible. And incredible is a very accurate description. And we are going to be even more awesome in the future. So let us turn to a truly great man. There are some people who like to try to vilify him and downplay some of the things he said, but I will tell you, Nietzsche has earned his place in European history and in the history of civilization. He was a truly great man with an incredible intellect. So let's take a quick look at some of the things that Nietzsche said briefly. By the way, the one in the bottom left, I found that quote from Nietzsche which made me chuckle. And it says, "Nobody is more inferior than those who insist on being equal." Isn't that now a wonderful explanation of the modern world? Nobody is more inferior than those who insist on being equal. We whites, we're surrounded by these kinds of people in this modern day and age. Surrounded by all kinds of unequal parasites who insist that they are equal. But let's turn to this quote from Nietzsche on the right, top right. Nietzsche says, "The world itself is the will to power and nothing else. And you, yourself, are the will to power and nothing else." And then Nietzsche says in another quote, top left, he says, "What is good? All that heightens the feeling of power in man, the will to power. Power itself. What is bad? All that is born of weakness. What is happiness? The feeling that power is growing and that resistance is overcome." Will to power is a very complex concept that was created by German philosophers even before Nietzsche. But Nietzsche went and took things to the next level. And they wrote entire books about the will to power. But we can summarize it and look at it briefly to see what it means. Will to power is simply that our minds have a desire for power and to increase our power. And the way that I see it is that if you look around you, look around at other people, but also look at yourself. I used to find, for example, that when I was depressed and when I was young, I was very depressed for a long period of time, and I was even suicidal at a certain time of my life. But I discovered something that's very German, actually. I discovered that when I went and got a job and got a career in computers, I discovered that there was something I enjoyed. I was learning computer languages and starting to use them and to write programs. And I began to develop a tremendous delight in my work. And the delight that I got in my work was from writing software and then running my programs and seeing the things that my programs could do. And I would write more and more sophisticated programs, and I would be writing them in business environments, and I'd be writing them to process data, to help people do their work, and I'd be talking to people in order to plan what it is that I need to write. Then I'd write it, then they'd use it, then they'd come back and they'd say, oh, this was really good, it's helping us in this way, it's helping us in that way, but you know what, let's change some things because it needs this and this enhancement to make it better. Or they'd say, there's a bug, you know, it's supposed to do that, but it's not quite doing that. And then I go and I hunt for the bug. I spend days or weeks or sometimes even longer trying to find the bug, fix the bug. And I developed a tremendous love of my work because I would feel this power coming from the work that I was doing. I felt that I had some kind of power that I was exerting in life, and this power would affect other people, and I delighted in seeing people also happy and telling me all the benefits that this is giving them in their lives. They are saying, oh, you know, with this system that you've written or this program that you've written, you've solved this horrible problem. This problem used to drive us crazy. It used to waste so many hours or days or weeks of our time, and now you've solved the problem and it can be done in an hour or 5 minutes or 1 minute or whatever it was. And I derived tremendous love of my work from just doing my work and seeing the results of my work. So without even knowing it, I was already addicted to power, but it was the power that came out of my own mind that was being used in my work. And then these machines, because all I'm doing is writing instructions for these machines to do things, and then these electronic machines, these computers, are doing things and it's helping somebody. And it's having all kinds of knock-on effects. And I loved it. And I began to thoroughly enjoy my work. And I became addicted to my work. And my work would make me happy. And if I felt depressed, I would then dive into my work and do my work. And very quietly, depression and negativity would go away. And I'd feel a whole lot happier. And no matter how depressed or sad I was at the start of the day, by the end of the day, I'd be feeling better. And I'm sure that there are many people who do work, all kinds of work, who feel better when they succeed at their work. Whether they are fixing a motor car engine or building something physical or designing something or winning over a client or doing all sorts of things, a nurse helping somebody to feel better and that kind of thing. I'm sure that lots and lots of people derive a pleasure from their work. And that pleasure comes from using their knowledge, applying their knowledge, whether it's physical or mental, and then seeing the results and feeling power. And feeling power in that particular area of expertise that they have. And it gives you confidence. You have confidence. You feel happier. You feel stronger. You no longer feel helpless, and quietly you start feeling happy. So if we return to Nietzsche and we see what he says, what is good? All that heightens the feeling of power in man, the will to power, power itself. And then he says, what is happiness? And he says, the feeling that power is growing, that resistance is overcome. Now, the concept of resistance is not one that we're going to go into here. This is when others are pushing back against you, when life itself or other people are pushing back against you, but you are overcoming them. Or when the resistance is within yourself and you are overcoming that resistance. But it is the feeling of strength that is making you happy and it's making you feel good. So Nietzsche says the world itself is the will to power and nothing else, and you yourself are the will to power and nothing else. So take, for example, a baby, a little baby that can't walk yet, but the baby learns how to crawl, and eventually the baby starts taking its first steps, and it starts giggling, and it starts feeling happy. If you look at children and how children grow up, you will see that they start laughing and feeling happy as they gain power. The power might simply be to crawl or to start walking, but that power comes. Even girls, even women, have got a lust for power. But the girls use their power in a different way. Their methods of using their power is different. So a man's power could be physical, it could be intellectual, it could be from social status, it can be from the kind of work he does or the things that he's dealing with. But a woman also has power. The girls also discover their power when she grows up and her body begins to develop and she starts becoming attractive and sexual and she begins to realize her power of her body, of her beauty. She discovers makeup and her hairdos and her nails and the clothing that she wears. And she puts on those high heels, and the boys are whistling. She's busy exhibiting her girl power, and she wants more of her girl power. She knows that the boys are drooling, and she wants them to drool more. And she wants to pick her guy, she wants to land her guy, but she knows that she's got to be at the top of her game, and she's working out all her plans, and it's not just physical, it's also cunning and sly. How's she going to meet this guy or get to that particular bloke? And maybe she dreams of getting married and having a family and all those children and her family. That's going to expand her power. She's going to have all these children who are going to grow up, and they're also going to look after her. So look around you and you'll see will to power everywhere. Some people, like the Jews, their will to power is money, but they are crazy for power. They are lusting for it at so many levels. But if you look around, you'll see everybody's got some form of will to power. Even if that will to power is, let me go to college or university and learn something because I want to get a better job. Or, I've got this job now, but I want to be promoted and I want to get something better. I want to earn more money. I want to move up in the rank structure. All of these things are the will to power. Will to power is there every day of your life, and you are busy thinking about what you are going to do. How are you going to earn more money? How are you going to do this? How are you going to acquire that car? And so it goes on and on. But animals also have got a lust for power. And their lust for power is the same thing. They want to procreate, they need to eat, and so on. They just don't have some of the sophisticated things that we have. They just don't have computers. But hey, I must tell you, when I look at octopuses, I'm telling you, I wouldn't be surprised at what those animals can get up to one day. I think that they could get interesting. Don't worry about aliens landing on Earth. Worry about the octopus. But there's a dark side to the will to power, and we're going to get to that. So let's return to this picture. Now, with animals, they have the ability to think for themselves up to a point. I'm not saying their IQs are as high as ours. Their IQs can be a lot lower than ours, depending on the species of animal. But they can want things, and they can also get angry, they can also experience fear, etc. But the thing that you must remember about an animal is that that animal has a mind of its own. And it will do what it thinks. Whatever its IQ is, it will do what it thinks is best for itself. So if it feels threatened, it might fight you. It can do many, many things. But it is a separate sentient being, and we do not, at this point in time, have ways of controlling their minds. Though I'm sure that there's plenty we could do if we wanted to, with even the current technology that we have. Animals are a whole other topic, and white people have a long history of interacting with animals. And we've done amazing things with animals. And we actually like animals. Even though we hunt them and we kill them, on the whole, we like animals and we know how to deal with these creatures. But they too can think for themselves, and they too can make decisions regardless of what you might think. So the story of this farmer, this is a guy in South Africa, an Afrikaans guy, a Boer, and this guy had a pet hippo. And he had a lot of fun with his pet hippo. And he looked well after the pet hippo. And this guy was a farmer. And he even built a big lake just so that his pet hippo could have a place to live in its natural habitat. And this animal grew up and he looked after it. And he treated it like a pet. In Africa, lots of white people love animals and they love wild animals. In Rhodesia as well as here in South Africa, there are instances of whites having lions and all kinds of other wild animals as pets. Elephants, rhinos, you name it. Whites have had many animals as pets. And I'm sure that whites in Europe and America and Canada and Australia have done the same thing. There is something in us that we get along with animals and we can handle them. But anyway, this guy had his hippo and he would even ride it like you see over there. He'd ride it and people would take photos, etc. But there were other people who warned him about this pet animal. Anyway, I don't know what happened exactly, but at a point, this guy was mauled by that pet hippo of his, and he actually died from his terrible injuries. You can actually find it on the internet. And he died a couple of years ago from the injuries that were caused by this particular animal. So he may have thought that he's kind to this animal, he's playing with this animal, And that this hippo will always love him in return, kind of a thing. Well, the hippo mauled him to death. And so he's dead, and that's where this thing ends. Now, that animal is a sentient being of its own, and for whatever reason, whether it was angry or whatever it was, it did what it decided to do. And whether it was impatient or angry, and it did whatever it did, and the end result was it is a very strong animal, and what it could do could kill him. So here's your first little lesson. And by the way, this kind of thing has happened to many whites who have had lions, tigers, and all kinds of wild animals as pets. I think there were those magicians who had lions or tigers, and they also had an incident where suddenly the animal bites the man and the man is seriously injured. That kind of thing. So there are lots of times where there's a creature, you look after the creature, and one day the creature either mauls you or injures you so badly or even kills you. So the problem is that animal was great when it was a puppy or a baby or whatever, but as it grew stronger and bigger, it becomes itself, it evolves, and when it acquires enough strength, it has got the ability, in some cases, like this hippo, it may have the ability to kill you. So it's wonderful to raise the animal and to see this interesting animal and play with it, etc. But it can kill you. When it grows up and it's big and strong enough, it can kill you. But you can't go and blame the animal in some way for doing that. That is simply what you can expect from another living creature. It does not operate on your morals or whatever. It has its own mind and it's got its own body. But in the same way that that animal can become stronger and grow up and become dangerous, the same happens with humans. And our ancestors, like the ancient Greeks, the highly intellectual ancient Greeks, they even mentioned the dangers of making other people stronger. Now we're getting into the world of liberals and Jews. And lots of Americans, for example, are deluded by liberal thinking. For example, they have come to believe incorrectly that if you are very nice to other human beings and you're very nice to them and pleasant to them, that they will return the favor. I'm talking now about non-whites, aliens, all kinds of other non-whites who head into America, and nowadays even Europe and Britain. So liberals come along and liberals say, well, you see, the reason blacks were like this to you in the past was because you were nasty to blacks, and you must be nice to them because if you were nicer to them, they will be nice to you. And lots of white liberals, unsuspecting whites, take this at face value as if this is fact. But in actual fact, the ancient Greeks already knew, because they had hundreds of years of history, just like the Romans, they knew that if you go and you take another group of people and you make them stronger, that when they become strong enough, they can turn on you. That other humans, even other whites, if you make them strong enough, they can turn on you. Take a look at the CIA. It has come out now that the CIA has messed around with all kinds of political groups, terrorist groups, all kinds of groups, all across the world. They've gone and they've given this lot money and given that lot guns and so on and so forth. And then it turns out that the CIA discovers that later on these same guys that they gave weapons to, gave military training to, that those guys turn on them. They turn on America. So it turns out that making all these other non-whites stronger, the next thing you know is they turn on America. They turn on the very people who actually helped them to become powerful in the first place. And the thing here in Africa for us whites is that we looked after the blacks who were, in essence, our slaves. They were slaves in everything but name. We paid them a little bit of money, we used their labor, and we had lots of them around, and we would look after them. But meanwhile, they are breeding, and their numbers are growing, and we are not interfering with that. And furthermore, there are many of them who are injured or sick and who would have died, but we come along and we heal them, and that also adds to their numbers. They have lots of babies that are born that would have died, but they were saved by a white doctor or a white nurse. And here we are today, here in South Africa, and we, the whites, are totally outnumbered by all these blacks, though 100 years ago they weren't that many compared to us. They didn't outnumber us back then like they do now. And we are surrounded by all these people, and you people in America and Europe, you're going to get tons and tons of all these other non-whites pouring in, especially from Africa. And you're busy feeding them, giving them jobs, making them stronger. And their numbers are increasing. And their numbers are increasing faster than your numbers. And so, liberals and Jews may have fooled you into thinking, almost like with that hippo, you must just be kind to them, be nice to them, and one day they will remember it, and they will love you, and they'll always be by your side, etc., etc. But the reality is, you're actually busy creating a future problem for yourself. Like we in South Africa now we've got tons and tons of these people. Now these people, in their politics and in their thinking, they want to destroy us. They want to seize our land. They want to take our jobs, our houses. They want to destroy us. Others of them even want to kill us. So all of that kindness and all of that stuff that you did in the past is all forgotten now. And they are strong. And they are strong and they're feeling strong. And as they feel stronger, they become more unpredictable. So the one thing I want to leave you with is that it is great to feel power and strength for yourself. But you must look carefully at who you give power to. And for me, when I look at it, I say these days that we should only give power and strength to our people, to our children, to our offspring, to those who will follow on from us. Those are the only ones we should be giving power to. Those are the only ones that we should be empowering. Because they, at least, are part of us, and they will continue onwards into the future. And they will carry our civilization and our nations forward. So they are a reproduction of ourselves. But all these other aliens and weirdos and creeps from other races, and inviting them into your nation and making them richer and stronger, that, my friend, is a very dangerous thing. And we whites in Africa, we are the perfect example of why you shouldn't do this kind of thing. And as I say, the ancient Greeks, they were already writing about it, writing about the examples in history where they went and they helped somebody, they made them stronger, those people turned on them, etc. And then they find that they've got a new enemy. This is why we should stick together as one and function as one. And the only thing we should care about is strengthening our own people and our own offspring. To go around and needlessly strengthen all kinds of aliens and other races and weirdos, that's very dangerous. Must be done with extreme care. It's the kind of thing you only do in times of war under certain kinds of duress, and you've got to be very careful what you do. The notion that you must go out and strengthen everybody and that everyone's going to love you, no, no, no. That's not what's going to happen. The moment they become strong enough to control you or destroy you, they can. Let's return to nature. Nature is immoral. Nature does not understand love. Nature does not understand kindness and forgiveness. Nature only understands power. And all living things, whether they are ants, termites, grasshoppers, rats, snakes, etc., all things operate only on one thing, and that is power. The morality that we think of, we must keep those things among ourselves. There are things that have to be kept inside of the group. And Western civilization is something that belongs to white people, to people of European descent. We must carefully guard this very special thing, and we must guard our nations and our civilization and be very, very careful who we let in. I'm warning you, all these others that are heading off to Europe and America and Canada and Australia, all these non-whites, you guys, you are in for the nightmare of your lives. And it will have been created by liberals and Jews. And they were talking all their nonsense, talking all their crap about love and blah, blah, blah. Watch what comes from that. Liberalism leads to civil war. So ponder the words of Nietzsche, ponder life, and learn some lessons. And then you will understand the universe and everything. And if you understand that good and evil and love and those things are not really the basis of nature, but that nature operates on a whole different level, then you'll understand, yeah, this is the nature of this world, this is the nature of this universe, and we must protect ourselves, protect our own. And be careful of strengthening others. And I'm referring to others of other races. Be careful of strengthening them. I have never come across an instance of history where any of them came back to help us. Our generosity comes from our strength, but we must be very careful how far we take it, because this thing can backfire big time. And while we have problems for our survival here in South Africa, I must tell you, the whites of Europe and America are in for a nightmare of a time as the years tick by. Their nightmare has just begun. And it came from listening to liberals and Jews.
So for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know, you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites. We gave you Breaking Bad and all the songs by Creed.
all the cast of Friends and trash like Tara Reid, a virtual world of porn so you can spill your seed. Ray-Ban glasses, leggy blondes with tiny asses, frisbee sports and fancy coffee too, energy efficient lights. And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites.
Thank the whites, you know you don't.